What up, people? This is the return of the Comic Pod. That's right. This is an episode entirely devoted to comic books, and for the most part, one or two comics in particular, because joining us today, which is myself and Bombcast Jay, would be Jim Ousley. Jim has been on the show a couple of times, both times promoting the first and second series of Butcher Queen, and this time promoting another one of his creator-owned books called The Atonement Bell, which will be out from Red 5 Comics after the Kickstarter's done, probably sometime around the first of the year. This book is a horror This book is a serialized horror comic, four issues with Raymond Estrada from L.A., an L.A. Los Angeles-based artist, which is kind of cool that Jim's kind of growing his network of talent to work with. But this was a fun episode. It's always a good time when Jim comes on. We managed to jump into a little bit of pop culture and really get off on some really fun tangents. So hopefully you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed listening or recording it. You enjoyed listening to it as much as we enjoyed recording it. How about that? And be sure to go to Kickstarter, look up The Atonement Bell, back it. Keep an eye out on a lot of great projects from some local and independent artists from your world or any part of the country. And make art happen. That's what I'm asking out of you. Make art happen. And while you're there, support one of my friends and Jim. So after the song, the episode starts. So which should be about now. It's
I constantly get that. Like,
it's funny, and put that. Would you move that mic? Well, it's funny because if you saw all the things that you're into, between music, and you know, being in a band and making movies and horror comics, which we're going to get into, I would think that you have to have a little bit of demons like drinking in you, is what people assume.
No.
Yeah, no, you don't have to have
it. I think it's because I'm just so like. You know, naturally messed up.
Well, anyway. You have so many outlets too.
Yeah, that helps. It does.
And I, you know how much I like cold opening, so we're gonna go ahead and use that as a cold opening. And so I'll tell everybody. We're gonna jump right into it. One of my favorite versions of this podcast that we do is always a comic themed episode, and you know I always call it the Pop Culture Comic Pod. And this week we're bringing it back. We're also bringing back a returning guest. I think your third episode
this
with
my
us.
Third, I think, yeah.
Third episode with us. And of course, to the right of me, before I introduce my guest, as we were just talking, my ever present co host, Bombcast Jay, is up on the podcast. And writer, creator, musician, movie maker, all kinds of hats you wear, returning guest, Mr. Jim Ousley. How's it going?
Going great. Thanks for having me on again. Well, third time. This is like the hat trick.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it literally can never come back on again, I guess, after a hat trick. I mean, what there's...
Next thing you know, you're a host.
Yeah.
I think we can get past this. I think we can go beyond this.
That's right. You come back on, I'll call you co-host. That's okay. The way we work it. You're here promoting something, The Atonement Bell, which you brought a button, which is awesome. I really like it, the art on it from what I looked at, too. And I want to get into it, but before we do that, I want to remind everybody the previous two times you came on, one was for the first Butcher Queen series, and then the second would be Volume 2, Planet of the Dead.
Correct, yeah.
And I just want to say, now that we've seen two complete Butcher Queen series, and you've had one come out from a publisher in Red 5, as you sit back and look at that, your first, you know, really nationwide publication, how does it all feel now?
Well, when I was a kid growing up, my dad was a cop, you know, in the city, and I was really introverted and didn't have, you know, many friends and stuff, so my friends were like, you know, Johnny Sacco and, you know, reading comics and things like that, so to kind of grow up, quote-unquote, grow up, and be able to, you know, write comics and then have a, you know, be published like that, it's a bucket list and it's a dream come true. Mostly because, you know, when you write a story, you want to communicate it to people and you want to make people happy or entertained or, you know, any of those things. And a publisher allows you to do that on a much bigger scale, you know. So we did the first Butcher Queen series when Red 5 picked us up for that. We debuted at San Diego Comic-Con.
Mm-hmm.
And that was amazing. Like, I've always wanted to go to San Diego Comic-Con.
Yeah.
And I think Ben's been there before.
Yeah, he had. He'd been there as a fan.
Right.
And, yeah, we talked about that.
Yeah, for both of us, though, that was our his first time being a featured artist.
Which is awesome.
Well.
It was awesome, yeah.
It was so fun. And so, and we did Planet of the Dead through Red 5. So we had two series through Red 5.
Yep.
And the Atonement Bell is going to be through Red 5 ultimately.
Okay,
as well.
Well, that's a question I was going to ask you. I can scratch that one off. But what was...
I don't mean to take all your questions.
No, that's okay. Go ahead.
Oh, no. I'm just laughing.
So, and the way I look at, we've known each other now through the podcast and just through back and forth and stuff.
And conventions.
And conventions. Like I've told people that I bought your first book before I ever had a podcast.
Yeah.
And then I got the comic convention cover the second year when you did the wraparound, the dust jacket. I got that.
Rough and Tumble.
Rough and Tumble, yeah. So I got that. And you guys were super nice. And honestly, when I reached out to you and we talked about coming on the show, or you reached out to me, I didn't even know until I went back and researched you that was you guys. Like, because there's so much time that it lapsed between. But so you're going to the Atonement Bell, which is a horror comics, which is my long-winded way of saying seems like back to your roots. But is there some Sid stories left inside that head, or is there any future?
There is. Yeah, I've got an outline for a third and final series that I would like to do. But it just depends on what Red 5 ultimately wants to do, after the Atonement Bell in relation to that. But, yeah, it's a really cool story, too.
And do you – obviously, they're on board because they're supporting the series for you as well. But was there any feedback? Because I can tell you from my aspect of the websites I read and the different outlets that I go to find and essentially farm out and weed out what I'm going to read and not read especially Planet of the Dead was very well received. Was that kind of critically, like the feel around the office, so to speak, for the Red 5 guys? Did they speak highly of how it was received?
Well, when we did the first one, and the first one was actually my first series. You know what I mean? Like first, longer series, like four issues. And before that, I had written just the short stories, anthologies and stuff. And so,
For those that don't know, Sid was a spinoff of one of those. Sid Kiwa,
the Dead Palace.
The Dead Palace. Yeah,
he was. Yeah, and and they really liked that series. And for me, I'm super proud of it.
You know,
but by the time we finished it, I was like, okay, I really know what's going on here. I know what my sort of method is. You know what I mean, for doing this. And so, Planet of the Dead for me is a much more streamlined and well-paced,
polished
series.
Like a little more, polished. Yeah. Well, it's cool you say that too, because I think I've been lucky, and hopefully at some point I've got to get back to it. I've taken a very long break. At some point, I can say I'm a creator like you guys are, because I've certainly written a lot. Yeah. I just haven't started drawing all of it again.
So you're an artist also?
I drew you guys that fan art too that one time. Yeah. And right now I just today took a job designing a CD single for a country music artist that's going to be at Freedom Jam. So I do a lot of that stuff. I'm lucky enough to have a lot of creators that I'm around. And boy, I don't even know where I was going because I got sidetracked with the art. But what's cool about it, it's very easy with like Ben. And we're talking about Ben Sawyer, your partner on The Butcher Queen.
Yep.
It's very easy for a person, especially a person that's not like really into comics or really into literature or writing, to just look at an artist and see how they grow. And certainly, man, Ben has grown, who's already good, but leaps and bounds. And when he went back and retouched up some panels for
the graphic novel.
Yeah, it was amazing. You were like, how can you improve on something that was good? And boy, he did.
He did.
But it's awesome to hear you say, because a lot of people don't understand, too, you get more polished in your process. You get more professional. And once you get your way to go about writing, it'll show in the stories. They'll get better.
Yeah.
And I think, and so I certainly enjoyed the first Butcher Queen, but I thought the second one, I don't know what the words I'm looking for, but it felt like any comic that I would have bought and read and like growing up and stuff. It felt like, well, these are guys that have just been making comics their whole lives. That's what it felt
thank
like.
Thank you for saying that. Yeah. The thing about Butcher Queen Planet of the Dead was that I wanted to, you know, from Sid's short story and the Dead Palace, and then the one-off that we did for San Diego and Wizard World, and the first series. They were very dark in tone, and with Planet of the Dead, even though it had to do with the potential end of the world.
Yeah, yeah.
I wanted to, these characters, I thought, okay, they've been through a lot. Let's give them some levity and let's give them a little more color and personality. And that was a joy to do because, you know, you can't really appreciate the darker stuff if you don't have a little bit of levity in there, I think.
Oh, absolutely.
For me, anyway. And so that's, I felt like I really did a good job with that. I was proud of that.
And put a pin in that thought, because in our, well, in the comic, what we normally would call our Throw It to Missy segment, we're going to call it, we call it the letter column in the comic book version of our podcast. We're going to talk about a movie that we all recently watched, I think, and how you throw levity into a very serious situation. And I think that James Gunn knows how to do that better than anybody. Yeah, yeah, so yeah. Put a pin in that thought. You brought up San Diego Comic Con, and for us, certainly here in the Midwest, I think in a driving distance from St. Louis, there's two really great shows. One is C2E2 in Chicago, and the other being Planet Comic Con, which Jay and I are going to make a road trip to here in the next few weeks. Is that on your guys' horizon again, going back to the conventions?
It is, yeah. Right now, though, you know, for the month of August going into September, I'll be working on the Toma Bell Kickstarter.
Oh, yeah.
And then I'll be head down doing the rest of the series, you know. After that point, like, especially next year, we're going to probably hit conventions hard.
It was kind of, is it kind of just the fact that the weird, there's a weird timing to where the world is, quote unquote, opening up, and not that Butcher Queen certainly has fallen off of people's radars, but it's done for now, and now you're working on some, so it just doesn't make it work to get back on these early conventions?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. And also, you know, everybody's really skittish out there.
Oh, absolutely.
Because of the the rise in numbers and everything else.
If you'd asked me 2 months ago, 3 months ago, when I booked this our hotel rooms and the tickets carried over from last year, I would have told you, awesome, I'm super excited. But in the last, like, 3-4 weeks, it's been like, well, shit, is this even going to happen? You know what I mean? But, I mean, I think we're rolling the dice. If I have to wear a mask, I wear a mask. I'm vaccinated. I'll put a mask on. I don't give a shit.
Yeah, I'm the same way. Yeah. I got no problem with vaccinations or wearing masks. I brought my Evil Dead ash mask today.
That's perfect. That's perfect.
You can see it on the podcast.
Well, that's that's a good tangent really fast. How excited are you that they're making another one?
Oh, man, I'm stoked.
And it's not that anyone's making another one. It's Raimi and Campbell, and it's right people are making it. I can't wait.
You know, I saw the first one in the theater. Not the first one, I'm sorry. Evil Dead 2.
Which was essentially a remake of the first one, for those that don't know.
Yeah. But I went to this movie with my girlfriend at the time, thinking, okay, it's a scary movie. She'll cuddle up to me and stuff. You know, all that kind of stuff. And we left our asses off.
Yeah. Boy, did you have it wrong. The first one, the first Evil Dead is an incredibly scary movie for its time. The second one was like, Bruce Campbell now knows, was comfortable in his own pants, so to speak. And he just, and that gave us what I consider the masterpiece of the three, Army of Darkness, which is maybe the... Yeah. I put Army of Darkness in one of the 10 funniest movies ever made.
Army of Darkness is great. I mean, that's the thing. When I first saw this movie with Evil Dead 2 and we went back to watch the first one, I never would have thought in 2021 we'd have like a third movie and then a fourth movie, like, and then there's this fifth one coming up in a TV show.
Yeah.
Like, if you're an Evil Dead fan, it's amazing.
Did you like the show?
I love the show.
I did. I finished it through COVID. I got a chance to finish it. And yeah, I loved it. I want those characters in the movie. Put the characters from the show in the movie, and I hear there's going to be some appearances from of them. So
that's cool. That's
nice. Because the show was just, it did everything for me, man. I mean, because of my pop culture maturing at the right time when, you know, an Army of Darkness was out, and that's when I really came into my own. And then certainly Tarantino's movies and things like that. Bruce Campbell, you know, being the pop culture icon and especially the genre and icon that he is. I mean, I don't give a shit if it was Briscoe County Jr., which I thought was amazing.
That's a great show.
And it's ridiculous. It's not on streaming or on DVD. Trust me. When I had when I used to work for V Stock, when it was back when it was Vintage Stock or Caveman in Springfield, Missouri, getting those VHS box sets, we could sell that thing all day at $200 when it was like 20 years ago.
Oh, wow.
When it was that, because it was, it's out of print and no one's ever done it. And I think there's an argument over the rights for it.
Well, that's too bad.
But Lord Boulder and all of them, and yeah, that show was amazing. But
it's fantastic, yeah.
And so let's go ahead, and that was a good tangent to be. We love tangents on our show. Let's yeah, spin on that, and let's talk. Let's talk about the horror and talk about the Atonement Bell. And first off, Raymond Estrada, is he a local guy here in St. Louis?
No, he's actually a Los Angeles.
Okay, that's a very artist. Los Angeles name for an artist, it Raymond is, Estrada.
Yeah. It is, yeah. He's actually got a series coming out this month for Red 5 called The Box, with written by Joshua Starnes, who's the publisher of Red 5, and that starts this month. It's a 4-issue series. And Josh let me see some of the artwork for the box, you know. And I was like, oh, man, this guy just happens to be perfect for this idea that I have.
Awesome.
The Atonement Bell, you know. And so Josh gave me his number, and I pitched the series to him, you know. And he was into it. And I was like, oh, my gosh. And so, you know, it's whenever I get new art, like a new page for him, it's like, oh, man. It's just so fresh, you know, for me.
What as a guy from St. Louis that is like you talked about Butcher Queen being your first serialized format. Before that, a bunch of short stories. What I mean, that's the value of Red 5, right? You now have this access to these people. When would you have ever dreamed that a guy from LA would be drawing one of your stories?
Oh, I mean, never. I mean, you know, and there's a lot of great artists in St. Louis.
Oh, unbelievable amount, yeah.
Fantastic. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, just the great thing about him, about Raymond specifically, was that he was so perfect for this story, you know?
Well, the sketches and some of the early the pics you have on the Kickstarter already before it's come up and on the Facebook page, to me, it screams a horror series. It's just, it looks great. I can't wait to see what the whole thing looks like. Yeah. It's because it's the perfect tease, because that's all they are, is little sample teases of it. Yeah. I can't wait to see it. Yeah. I can't wait to see it.
So how is the collaboration process different than where you have been here in St. Louis, but now you're working with Los Angeles?
Believe it or not, it's actually not that different, because, with technology, even before COVID, mm-hmm, when I would speak to Ben, it'd be through the phone or texting or email or a shared Dropbox or something like that. And with Raymond, it's basically the same thing. They're both really easy guys to work with. The main difference is the style, mm-hmm, you know. And I think when people check out The Atonement Bell, they're really going to be surprised. If you've only seen The Butcher Queen, I mean, it's going to be a completely different visceral.
And I think
experience.
Ben has done a really great job of developing his look.
Yeah.
So yeah. So it's a departure to see your vision in someone, because you've had so much with Ben.
Yeah.
So that's got to be fun.
Well, the first thing that when I talked about doing this new series with Raymond, people were asking me, "Are you and Ben still friends? Like, are you guys still? Is there a breakup or something?" And I called Ben and I said, "Look, people are asking me about this." Yeah. And I'm just going to tell you, there's no problems for me. Yeah. I think we're good.
Well, also, for anyone that's friends with Ben on Facebook or follows him on Facebook or any social media, it's not like Ben's not doing stuff between being physical trainer now, before being a weight, a trainer, and the online stuff he's been doing. He's putting out a lot of work lately.
He is working on video games. And,
yeah.
I mean, there's not a chance he would have the time to even work on this.
But, I'm fairly certain, if it was something that you would have pitched to him, he probably still would have jumped on it.
Talk about doing more Butcher Queen.
Which is exciting.
Presents itself, you know?
I love the idea of a 3-story arc format. There's something that we've been really big on recently in the Old Guard. That's what they're doing too, mm-hmm, you know, which has made its way to Netflix. And it's a very BBC way of doing TV, to just do like very limited run, but it tells a great story. Just 3.
I love that. I love the limited run stuff, because you just get the meat of the story, and there's no extra fluff, and
Very, very Joseph Campbell. It fits that story circle pretty well.
Yeah.
That's what I like about it. So what brought up the Atonement Bell? Where does it, first off, give us a little quick pitch so people know what's happening. And by the way, we tweeted about, or I already shared the post, and we'll certainly do it again. But as people listen to this, we'll be a full 24 hours into the Kickstarter, because this will release Wednesday.
Tomorrow.
No, well, this episode.
Okay.
And the Kickstarter will go live on Tuesday, the day before this comes out. Yeah. So you'll have time to see it, and it'll be in full force. And the good news is, you won't be the first one to back it, but you'll see how much steam it's already got going by that point.
I hope so.
Oh, it will. Yeah, I mean, you will. And again, as one of my notes here is, you guys are old hats at Kickstarter now, so you know what you're doing with Kickstarter.
Yeah, we try. It just takes a lot of work. I mean, when you do a Kickstarter, you live it for that month. I mean, you live it.
Which is crazy, because I'm sure most people think that it's, I got the project of whatever I'm kickstarting is what I'm going to do, but I don't think people grasp what a commitment and what promises you have to make a Kickstarter successful.
You do, it's just a lot of talking about yourself and your story and everything else. And
and luckily though for you, for every Kickstarter that you've done and that have successfully done, that's another piece of your resume that's out there, and it makes your story easier to tell for the next one, which is awesome.
Hopefully,
So where did the Atonement Bell come from, and what's it about?
Well, the Atonement Bell is about a grieving mother and son who are on their way to visit an estranged family in the city, and they unknowingly become involved in a conflict between a coven and an inner-city church. An inner city church, and I've not seen that done before.
Yeah.
As a story, and it kind of includes all the stuff I love in horror. It's a really cool ghost story. It's got sadistic witches in it, and it's got our three protagonists. I'm just in love with them. I love writing them. It's Jake, who's 14. His cousin Baby Al, who's 16, and his friend Sarah, who's a Bosnian girl in the city, whose parents own a store down the street. And it's just it's really a story about family, how far you would go to protect family, and the impact that religion has in our lives.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah, what I like about it is, certainly I've seen and heard of stories that have involved witches and churches and stuff, but they've all been very rural and in the country. The hook for me when I read the Kickstarter was like, oh, it's an inner city. That changes the entire dynamic of a story like that.
Yeah.
And so that is very cool, and it's got a very, when you talk about the witches, I think for those that, in my family is a very big horror family. My wife and my oldest daughter, one thing that we did recently is we had to watch the entirety of the Annabelle. What's that?
The Annabelle series or The Conjuring?
The Conjuring series. Yeah. So my daughter wanted to watch the whole thing. So we shotgunned over a couple weeks all of them.
Even like the spinoffs.
Even the spinoffs. What we did is very Marvel style of doing it. We followed them chronologically as the story happened instead of the way they were released. So
that's true.
So we dive into things. So for me, when I hear the way you talk about the satanic witches in there, Paranormal Activity, if you've seen all of those, they really, those like, at first it's fun and it is great. The first one's great. I thought it was super good. But then when they start fleshing out the stories, when I saw the drawing of the people in the covered, and I was like, oh, that really reminds me of that, which was far creepier to me than, because, I grew up in the country, and we just assumed there were witches going on. Every time we broke out the Ouija board when we were 12 or 13 years old and scared the shit out of ourselves, that's exactly what I assumed was going to attack us, was a bunch of...
We used to do that as well. Yeah. Scare the hell out of ourselves with the Ouija board.
Also, the other point from you just telling me the story, and this is something I, as a guy, even though I'm not born and raised in St. Louis, but I've certainly spent the... it's certainly the greatest part of my life, because it gave me my wife and my kids.
Yeah.
And I know people won't get this connection, so I want to explain it to them. Having a Bosnian-based character with a store is a very St. Louis thing, because we have a very high Bosnian population. I even have two houses on my street, and very good friends of ours live right up the street, and their parents live right next door to them, and they're Bosnian. And
that was really important to me. I mean, a lot of things fed into the story to flesh it out. You know what I mean? Not COVID as much. Although something did affect me with that I'll talk about in a bit, but I wanted to make sure that St. Louis was represented, the St. Louis that I see.
Yeah.
And so certainly we have a large Bosnian population who have become important to the city and actually revitalizing parts of the city that were dormant.
Yeah, absolutely.
And also, you know, the divisiveness in the city racially, you know.
Yeah.
So it's got a lot of that subtext. I do want to say that you can enjoy the series without thinking about any of that.
Yeah.
But the subtext is there. And once you see it, it's hard not to, you know, even with the witches, you know, it's like, it's all about perception and how we perceive each other. Are the witches actually bad? I don't know. You know what I mean?
As the story
unfolds, it's like, why are they visiting Jake?
Well, it's,
you know what I mean?
It's for me, kind of the way you explain it or the way you're wanting to talk about the subtext and what's essentially a scary story. Mm-hmm. That's what made Get Out with Jordan Peele work so well, is that it was
I love his movies, man.
Both movies.
Yeah.
Very good. And I actually think that Us was scarier than Get Out.
Me too.
But both are, I mean, you can watch those movies and not give two shits about racial inequality or what's going on in the world and just enjoy the movies.
Exactly.
But if you have half a brain, you're like, oh, this guy's telling me something. And it's pretty deep.
Yeah.
And that's what makes to me, that's the difference in and certainly I love a cheesy, scary movie.
Oh, yeah.
And a good movie.
Yeah.
As if that makes sense. And it works for a story, too.
I think so. And, you can't live in St. Louis and not come to terms with those things on some level. You know what I mean?
Our entire city was designed with racial inequality in mind.
Yeah.
I mean, from our transit system, you know, on. So
absolutely.
I think we have an incredibly great city. There's a lot of parts of the city I love, but we've got some demons in our closet.
That's the thing. I love St. Louis.
Yeah.
You know,
this is not a black eye for you, but a love letter that happens to expose some of the things that we should move past.
I think so. I think that's a really great way to put it. I mean, for me, it is that way. You know, it's there is some of that subtext, but it is a love letter to the city in a lot of ways. And I wanted to make sure that the city that I see is represented in this book, you know, in this series.
Yeah.
And I think that's fun because it just gives it more color and more layers and stuff. You know, it's fun.
Did you have to go into more detail in the scripts then for the artist because he's not here and doesn't see it like you do?
No, not at all. I mean, especially with this series, the scripts are even more kind of detailed than the Butcher Queen series was. Ben and I were so in sync with the whole cyber.
That's his jam.
That's his jam, and I loved it as well, and we just synced up with that kind of stuff, you know.
And you guys also, too, have had the luxury of essentially working on Sid Kiowa, is that how to pronounce it?
Sid Kiowa, uh-huh.
Kiowa, yeah, for a long time before it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I could see where not as much explanation was needed for Ben. You guys have you've been together for so long.
Right.
To what he said, how did that process go, though? Did you guys get on a lot of Zoom? Do you get on a lot of Zoom calls, or do you just converse back and forth when you see pages or sketches?
Sort of. I mean, we've talked on the phone a number of times, but mostly it's through email and through texting, which is completely fine with me because for, you know, a lot of reasons. But the main thing, to answer your question about the script, there was a deliberate, because of the distance,
mm-hmm.
There was a deliberate need for me to really, really flesh out the details in the script.
Yeah.
You know, because he's not from St. Louis. That was the main thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so, and it's also out of anything I've ever done. I'm talking about, like, even in music, like recording with bands and stuff. This is the most personal story I've ever done.
Really?
Yeah. And so I had to really make sure that every page and every line was banging for me.
Let's touch on that a little bit. What about the story gave you that personal connection? Was it just everything about St. Louis, or was it just
it was growing up in St. Louis, loving my city, seeing the faults. You know, the great thing about St. Louis is potential.
Yeah.
It's always got potential, you know. Sometimes it makes it, sometimes it doesn't. But it's an ongoing struggle. You know what I mean? To make things better, you know? So it was a combination of that, and it was a combination of my own family. Over the past few years, there's been a lot of things in just life in general, whether it be, talking about sociology or political things, where people have really kind of drawn a line in the sand for a lot of things. And
it's a very popular way of dealing with things of lately. You just take a hard stance.
It's unfortunate.
People want to die on a lot of hills lately.
Yeah, you know? And it's really unfortunate.
Yeah, it's not what we were, in fact, it's not as a race how we should live, you know?
Yeah, really. And the one thing I found fascinating about all that is that for me, it was a lot of people that I knew and some family members who were really devoted to religion. And I have no problem with religion. I don't want to say that right there. But they were really, really into it. And yet, some things they were saying and doing were in such opposition with it that it really made me think. You know, and during lockdown and during COVID, I had a lot of time.
You absolutely did.
So that's where the story came from. But like I was telling you with Butcher Queen, Planet of the Dead, I feel like levity is so important. So, you know, because if you don't have levity, the other things tend to get lost in the darkness.
And we talked about in Butcher Queen, too, the themes of that book. Just you guys,
the first series especially.
You guys just backed into the pandemic on Planet of the Dead.
Right, yeah. That was totally an accident.
Yeah, it did not mean to shadow what was going on in the real world, but it certainly worked itself that way.
It did. That was a weird one because when that came out, lockdown I think happened was had begun, and so we couldn't go to conventions and promote it.
Yeah,
it was difficult.
I mean, God, I got to say it was probably March or April when you guys came on.
Yeah.
And that was – the lockdown happened in February or March, right? Yeah. So you guys – we zoomed in and got it to work out, and it just – yeah. Because
it's crazy.
I was the – I did the – well, it doesn't matter the value, but I did one of the topper tiers.
Okay, yeah.
And I was one of the first ones to do it because you guys came on the show the week before the Kickstarter launched, or the same week, kind of like this episode, the same week. So I got to be the first guy to do one of the big tiers.
Nice.
And I felt good about that, but it was, it was just so weird because it seems like old hat now. I mean, we know how to navigate a world of a pandemic, but at that point, the three-way Zoom call that we did with me, you, and Ben, it was just still so foreign and so random.
It was weird, because you're used to being a human being and, talking in person to another human being.
And certainly, even though the internet has done a good job of helping people find their tribe, one of the most beautiful things, I think, about comic books is the extension of that is the convention. And whereas you guys would go to conventions to hype it up and certainly sign people, and I guess I should digress a little too. I want to go back to something you said here in a minute about the first time I met you guys, but like that was all taken away from us, and it was so different because it was an unnatural way for one for you to promote a book, and two, we're talking about a hobby that completely lends itself, even in the internet world we are, the convention is still a super important part, certainly not even for us old guys who are in our 40s or going to be in our 40s. For even the young people, it's a very important thing for them to get around. I mean, hey, I've never cosplayed once, and it's not because I don't want to.
Yeah.
It's because I'm just getting so damn old, I don't have time to make my costume. But I get a general thrill seeing an 18-year-old awkward kid at a convention.
Oh, me too.
That is in his cosplay, with his element, in his tribe, and people are asking for his picture.
There's a sense of belonging.
Yeah,
and great.
And so you didn't have any of that. We couldn't see any of that.
Even to a lesser degree, going to a comic shop for a while.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, I mean, I clearly remember growing up and, like, before I got into theater and stuff, and you find your tribe there, too.
Yeah, absolutely,
That's where all the oddballs go, like me. But I remember going to a comic shop, and you meet people that you've never met before, and you're both talking about Captain America, you're talking about Jack Kirby, all these things, it's great.
I was the comic guy, then I was the store manager, then I was certainly the comic shop owner. And I can tell you this, and I don't have a problem saying this. I spent some days, Wednesdays, everybody in the world that listens to this knows that's New Comic Book Day.
Yeah.
I spent the best part of my Wednesdays talking to people that I otherwise would try to avoid talking to just because they were so awkward at conversation.
Sure, yeah.
But their confidence at what they were talking about made them have a great passable conversation with me.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know,
very passionate.
And because of my size and background, I would probably be a guy that a lot of my customers avoided talking to in life.
You're an intimidating looking dude.
But when I'm sitting there stocking the new comic shelf, they had no problem to come up and tell me every thought. I both love this story, this experience and hated it. I'm not a fan of the show Supernatural, not because I don't like it, because
I've never
sucked.
Seen it.
I just never watched it.
Yeah.
And that show's been on a long time. And the fact that I can tell you this story and the show just recently ended it was already in like its 10th season when my shop was open. And I had a guy set and break down each individual season for me as I was stocking the shelf. Awkward kid. But it was a 3-hour conversation. And I felt I knew everything, but I couldn't stop him.
Could have been my buddy Toner.
No, it was not. He was younger. Oh, okay. But I was sat there and I was like, this kid's, my partner at the time goes, was that wearing you out? I go, oh, yeah. And he goes, you should have said something. I go, no, dude, that kid just bestowed the holy grail of knowledge upon me.
And also,
world.
You did him a favor also.
Yeah.
I mean, you brought up something that was really interesting. From an energy perspective, you know what I mean? Like, I know when we do conventions, when the day is done, I don't want to even go out because I'm just so tired.
Oh, it is wears you out. Yeah.
But I love it. Like, I love it when a kid comes up to me and asks me questions, or we're just talking about another comic we both like. It feels good knowing that kid is there. He's found his tribe and he's talking to you. That means he's letting you in too, or she's letting you in. You know what I mean? And it's a very communal experience.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, the lack of conventions. That was not only tough on people like that, but also indie publishers.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. You know, they really took a hit. And so hopefully, you know, things get better and, you know, we can get back to conventions again.
And I'm fairly certain I told this story the very first time you guys came on. But speaking of conventions and loving St. Louis, and this is a fun story for me, is the first time I met you guys, and you weren't Jim and Ben. You were just two guys with a comic. For me, what I look for, and I always do this, and I'm not asking for anybody to give me a badge because I'm such a great person, but when I go down Artist Alley or the Independence, I look for something, one, that sticks out to me. And it can be your logo, it can be the general atmosphere around your booth, it could be the art.
Yeah.
For you guys, it definitely was the rough and tumble cover. And then when I picked it up, there's a way you can talk to somebody that picks your book up and not be like you're, because a lot of guys feel like they really need to sell themselves on it. You
right.
guys did not really, you weren't car salesmen that day, you just talked to me. I loved more than just his pencils, I loved the color palette that was used in Rough
and
Tumble.
He's a great colorist.
It was amazing. And so I was like, I had to have this. And you guys were, like I said, you guys were awesome. I believe it was the next year I went back and you had the new wraparound. So,
yeah.
And I'll be honest, you guys didn't even sell that to me. You gave it to me because of my story of how we met the first year.
Right.
And you gave it to me because of this next story I told you. I took the Rough and Tumble home, read it that night, loved it. I think when you and I and Ben talked on the first one, I compared it to if Dave Lampham, who's one of my favorite comic book writers who did Stray Bullets, had wrote Grindhouse, like the movie Grindhouse, and that's the way it felt to me.
Yeah.
And I think for me, considering my undying love for Quentin Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez and even Dave Lampham, that's like my ultimate compliment. I loved it. But what was funny is I read that book. And one story stuck out to me about, speaking of St. Louis and a St. Louis story, was the Bubblehead story. But what was funny is I read it and it put it in the back of my mind in the file cabinet of fun stuff I read. Never came up. I never talked about it. My wife certainly is not a comic book fan. But it was probably a year or so later where I'm sitting around at Honestly, it was probably between our mutual friends, the Chapmans.
Okay, yeah.
It was probably at my house when I lived in Overland. Will probably came over for a fire on one of my birthdays, and we were sitting around, and everybody was talking about spook lights and things of that nature because Beth always works these
houses and stuff.
Yeah.
Ghost, yeah.
So we were talking about scary stuff, and somebody said the word bubbleheads, and I was like, wait a minute, what'd you just say? And so somebody started telling me a story. I go, no, I know this story. And so at that time I couldn't even remember your guys' name at that point, but yeah. I remembered that story, and I was like, I read a comic book where they brought it up, and I'm sure Will was like, oh yeah, that's a St. Louis story. So then it was so fun to me how things came full circle, because fast forward to me releasing the episode, and Will and Beth sending me messages like, oh, you know Jim? I go, well, sorta. And they're like, oh, and then it tied it all together for me. I was like, one big bubblehead knot.
We all went to the same high school.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
I was older than them.
But that was super fun for me, and it was cool how that bubblehead story, which is a very St. Louis story.
It's a very St. Louis story, and it's a very North County story.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's even more like... there's a great movie called The Commitments. If you've never seen it,
it's a great movie.
Oh yeah, it's when the manager explains what the Irish are, how they're the blacks of Europe, and how they know. And so it's North County is very much the has its own sect in St. Louis.
Oh yeah,
its
own. Yeah, it's so true. Yeah. I mean, I remember in high school, one of the rituals was around Halloween, you would go look for the bubblehead house. You know, and see if you can find one of the bubbleheads walking around. It's just, you know, there are all kinds of rumors, like, were they the victims of experiments? There are all kinds of stories.
Well, and you tackled it the best, and I don't want to ruin it for you. If you guys go check out, I think I've seen it's still for sale on
I think it's on Amazon.
Amazon, yeah. I think it's on Amazon. I think you can find. I found it through Ben's page before. Yeah. Certainly, it's worth the rough and tumble. There's some good stories in it, and that one is I mean this in a positive way. That's certainly for me the book, the cotton candy of the book, because it's very very light and fluffy compared to some of the other stories in it.
Yeah. Well, that whole book I think is a pretty fun.
It is fun.
Light read. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like you can just pick it up and read it anywhere.
Yeah, yeah, and that's certainly the lowest stakes, and the plot twist you have with the bubbleheads is fun in that. But let's tie it back to the Atonement Bell too, because we talked about we talked about some of the scary stuff that we liked, whether it was Bruce Campbell and you know, Sam Raimi and stuff. But so when you sat down to write something like this, a twofold question, what classic horror has inspired you for stories like this, and certainly anything you've ever done? And what current stories and stuff are TV or movie that you see that really gets you going?
I think with the one, you know, the great thing about horror movies, I think, is that you can enjoy them on two different levels. Mm-hmm. You can enjoy the creepiness of it and the atmosphere of it and just the weirdness, but you can also horror has always been a good way to bring up, social topics. Let's say,
yeah,
you know what I mean. And it's like George Romero, of course, is the first person you think of with things like that. But as far as my own horror taste, I'm a huge fan of the Universal horror monsters.
Oh, the classics. That's as classic as you get. Yeah.
Yeah, particularly the pre-code stuff, like the Black Cat, Dracula's Daughter, all that kind of stuff. It's so, so good. But I, 80s horror is a big one for me as well, because that's when I was sort of a teenager in high school.
Yeah.
So, Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th, all those guys,
Yeah.
I'm a huge Halloween fan.
My wife's one of her top five favorite movies, the first Halloween.
Mine too.
Yeah.
Mine too, yeah.
We have the Blu-ray, and we watch it every year.
Yeah.
Every year. And in fact, if the long, because we have Shudder. We have Shudder. Every year in October, it's a scary movie a day. No matter what we're doing, we make sure we turn on a scary movie, even if we fall asleep to it.
Yeah.
But I can judge my wife's tolerance of our things that are going on in life by how long in the month we go before watching Halloween. And like, if it's like, if we get into the 20th or so day of October, and we had yet to watch Halloween, then I know, man, we've been really busy, and it's been a good kind of busy because she hasn't complained. But if we're in like day six and she says we got to watch Halloween, it's because the first 5 days sucked in October, and it's time to redeem October.
We got
to
get a good one. Yeah. Did she like the newest one?
She loved the last one. The Danny McBride one. She loved Danny McBride. I was very excited about the new trailer. I like how it happens the same night. I thought they did a really good job on that.
I'm so excited.
I enjoyed the first Rob Zombie.
Yeah.
The second Rob Zombie, he didn't even want to make it. He was just contractually obligated to make it.
Yeah, the fascinating thing about that, about his Halloween 2, is that it's such a hot mess to watch.
Oh, yeah.
That, like, I can get entertainment from that because it's like...
Oh, yeah.
It's like every creative decision seems like the wrong one.
Yeah.
They do it the opposite way.
Well, but it's the same way he did House of 1,000 Corpses. There's two different movies in that movie.
Yeah.
And it's because he was making a movie and they ran out of money. And then months and months went by and a studio finally picked it up and said, well, here's a boatload of cash. Do whatever. So then it turns into the Dr. Satan stuff underneath the house. It's like, this doesn't fit.
Yeah.
And that's almost what he did with Halloween 2. He's like, I'm just going to use every penny they give me and make the craziest movie
possible. And he did.
Well, he really did. It's not a Halloween movie. I don't even know what it is. And I've probably watched it 5 times.
So. I know, me too. Yeah. I know. I'm the same way. It's so funny. But yeah, the new Halloween movies, I love them all, to be honest with you. But I'm excited about the new ones for sure.
Now, with things like, and I know that, you know, like you said, you're very busy with the Kickstarter that's launching as we record this tomorrow, but as you hear it the day before. Mm-hmm. And then you've got to go out and write the damn thing and finish writing the damn thing. And then you've got to, it's an entire hard process, but we just talked about Shudder, but do you still inadvertently fill the tanks and farm a bunch of ideas by still... Do you make time to sit down and watch the Shudder, the Netflix, and things like that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure. Yeah, I have Shudder.
Which is great. Shudder's great, Shudder's, by the way, for those that don't know.
Oh, yeah. It's if you love horror, it's worth a subscription.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. But, I can't watch as much as I want to. You know what I mean?
Just that's what I mean. Is you're watching more pointed. Do you still watch stuff that really... Not necessarily gives you ideas, but inadvertently gives you ideas.
I don't know. When I watch a horror, as a horror movie lover, one thing I love about it is I love having my buttons pushed.
Yeah.
You know, and whenever I finish a horror movie, I feel so much less stressed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I go to horror movies really just purely for entertainment.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I've seen Black Christmas, which is one of my all-time favorites.
Absolutely.
The original.
The original, yeah.
So many times. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And Evil Dead, all that stuff. I do find myself revisiting a lot of the same ones, but Shudder's great for, like, finding the new ones.
Yeah, and certainly finding a lot of the foreign ones, too, the way that I wouldn't otherwise have an option to watch. Me and the wife watched recently, and I think I talked about it on the podcast last week. We watched Pledge Night. Which, if you haven't watched that, it's...
I haven't seen it yet. Is that good?
Well, no, but yes. I mean, it's really, really dumb. Like, it's what it is, it's a college version of Nightmare on Elm Street. Like, it's a Freddy-style bad guy, but he's a hippie that was accidentally hazed into death.
Yeah.
And but he comes, like, stay cool or peace. And it just... And The movie absolutely as a horror fan worth watching because there is the right kind of gore in it and special effects and some good special effects. The great thing about scary movies as a whole is if it wasn't for horror movies, there'd be a lot of special effects that would still be trying to find their way. We get a lot of special effects from horror movies because they find the best way to do the dumbest, grossest shit.
A lot of filmmakers, absolutely.
And, and that's certainly where Nicoteros of the world and all them come from.
James Gunn,
we're going to get into him in a little bit. But this one has some good moments, but it has maybe, and this is not hyperbole, which I've often given to on this show, maybe the worst resolution in the history of B-movie scary movies. Like, the way it resolves is
Have you seen Deadly Blessing with Ernest Borgnine?
I have not.
Okay.
But that's got a good name in it.
Well, it does, but it will challenge your idea of a bad resolution.
Yeah.
Or a crazy resolution.
Okay, yeah.
Like, literally out of nowhere, at the very end.
You got to watch this and let me know what you think, because it doesn't make sense on how it just snapped resolution to it. And then it still has your typical scary movie. I'm still here. You know, ending.
You're talking to a guy who paid money to see Dr. Giggles.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I tell people the worst decision I've ever made in paying money for anything was, what's that movie? Gosh darn it, I can't remember the name of it now. Boy, God, it was awful. It was in the 2000s, and it was, she was essentially a vampire, I believe. I'm going to have to look it up. Come back to this.
Was it Cursed, or was it?
This was an action movie, and it turns out the church was the bad guys, and it was something purple. I'll look it up. I think it was it was really bad. It's maybe the worst movie, and I sat through the whole goddamn thing.
Oh, I never walked out on a movie ever.
And I saw many people walk out. The most people I've ever seen walk out on a movie was this movie, and then Very Bad Things with Jeremy Piven and all them. It was like one of the forerunners of dark comedy, and people didn't get it. They were like, I'm out of here, and I'm dying laughing in the background. So especially when the hooker gets hung up on the
door hook.
The only movie I've ever walked out on, and it was because I had to, because all my friends left, was Naked Lunch.
Oh, really? Yeah.
They just could not handle it, so I had to go back and see it, you know, myself.
All right, so back, and I know we get off topic, but that's what I like about this conversation. It gives people kind of a real idea of what, you know, your personality for something like The Atonement Bell. How many issues is Atonement Bell going to be?
It'll be a 4-issue series.
Okay,
you know, if the Kickstarter goes really super well, There's a potential for a fifth issue.
Okay.
But I really feel good about it being 4 issues.
Yeah. Now, you know what I mean? Now, and obviously I know what you need from the Kickstarter in order to do an extra 5 issues, but story-wise, do you think it works better one way or the other? Do you think that fifth issue will make it work better, or?
Well, I think it may not even have a fifth issue. We may decide to do something else if it goes over, you know, hopefully, you know.
Yeah.
But right now it feels pretty perfect for me as a 4-issue series, you know. To get back to your question about movies, what kind of movies kind of inspire it? I'm really a big fan of atmospheric horror films, kind of like The Woman in Black. But not the version with the Harry Potter actor, Daniel Radcliffe.
Oh, yeah.
This is the made-for-TV British version. And it's just got this woman.
I've never got around to seeing that version, but I'm aware of it.
So it's really, really good. And I just love creepy stuff. And I think a lot of that stuff comes from the old Universal horror movies, particularly the pre-code ones, you know. A combination of that and 70s... films that kind of featured more urban stories.
Yeah,
you know, I've always wanted to do something that had that kind of where those two things met at an intersection. Now, it takes place in modern times. It takes place now, I've always loved and wanted to combine those elements to some extent. You know, and that is what's really got me excited about it.
Yeah,
like I detailed out the outline. I always start with an outline, how many issues it's going to be, and like really detail each issue, how it begins and ends, everything else, what the cliffhangers are, what the twists are, all that kind of stuff, so that by the time I write it, it's like this completely joyous experience for me. You know what I mean? Like, I just get to hop on and go.
So how is that different from doing like your short stories then?
You know, before I started doing comics, me and a buddy of mine, Oscar Madrid, were writing screenplays, working on screenplays and stuff. And we actually did one called Ooch and Daddy-O that we got done low budget here in St. Louis. But
I'm glad you brought that up. I was going to bring it up when we get I wanted to segue when we get to the letter column aspect of this. Is we're going to talk about the movies like The Suicide Squad, and you're a guy that has wrote and been a part of making a film. So
yeah,
yep. So. But yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I forgot what I was saying. What was I saying?
Just your short stories versus.
Oh, yeah. So I was like, I was kind of afraid of writing short stories because I was thinking, how do you write something that's like 8 pages, you know, 10 pages, whatever, and make it work as a self-contained story. And so it just, you know, it took working with Ink and Drink, They Can Drink Comics guys, and mm-hmm. you know, working with other artists and writers and figuring that out. And now it's just kind of another feather in your cap, you know, yeah. something that's like, there's one that we have coming out with that I did for Free Comic Book Day for Ink and Drink, a story called That's What Fiends Are For, and it's like a 4-page thing, you mm-hmm. know. And it's nice having something that I used to be sort of like afraid of a little bit yeah. to approach, and be able to like go, okay, well, this kind of story fits best in a short story, and this story is more expansive and fits a series better. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Before, so, I would have no idea
yeah.
what was what.
So do yeah. you have like a bank of short stories that you're waiting to publish after you get a break?
I do have like some mm-hmm. that I've mapped out. My big problem is when I do something like the Atonement Bell or Butcher Queen, I'm all in it. You know what I mean? And that means spending a lot of time with it, you know? And I try to do other creative things outside of comics yeah. just to keep everything fresh and kind of feeding each other and just feel sort of like creative all the time. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I don't have, because it's not all that I'm doing, it's, you know, at some point I would like to just take a break and just do nothing but flesh out those stories, those yeah. little ideas, and put them out.
Well, it's kind of like how we, my question would be kind of how, like we were talking about with artists that's growing and stuff too, and it's easy to see, but one, being a guy that's got a couple of friends with, who are published writers, and writers write, so do you sometimes just sit down and just write something to
oh, yeah.
keep the juices flowing, and then you come back to it later, or is it always a targeted writing process?
Most of the time, it's a targeted writing process, but, you know, I try to, like, throw my brain into other things, like writing poetry or my stupid haikus, which you've
probably yeah, your said. Your haiku. I was going to say, I could partially answer this for you. The topical things promote his or prompt his haikus all the time, and they're fun. They're a great time.
They're really dumb. They're usually pretty dumb. And a lot of times they're, you know, offensive, but over lockdown, I actually put out a haiku,
which
book.
Is all yeah, which is, it was one of the Kickstarter
yeah,
that was one of your achievements.
Yep.
Yeah,
and so, you know, with writing, there's a band that I'm in that I write lyrics for, mm-hmm. and so I'm always writing. You know, I'm trying to write something. I'm trying to keep the portals open,
yeah,
and keep the receptors open for those new ideas. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because, you know, are you a writer also?
More editorial.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you know, it's always a good idea to like just keep your mind open to, you know, a conversation you might overhear, or be in touch with how you feel about something, and
yeah.
how it manifests itself is a mystery until that chance arises. You know yeah. what I mean? And the Atonement Bell has a lot of those moments for me. There's a lot of things coinciding that made me go, okay, this is going to be really, really fun. It's been building up.
Yeah,
yeah,
you know. Yeah. Go ahead if you had something.
Go.
So speaking of unlockable achievements, one of the things that you guys did together, very cool, especially on the second Butcher Queen, is you had some, you had in particular really good guest cover artists for a goal for it. Do you have any? And as keep in mind, as this releases, you will have some stuff locked up. Is there anything you know about or can announce that's going to be cool as part of your Kickstarter?
Yeah, I do. There's a guy, an artist also in LA, who's doing our variant cover for our Kickstarter exclusive. His name's Thomas Hedledge. I hope I'm not butchering his name. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, we'll fix that post. It'll be great.
But he did this really, really amazing cover for us for the first one. I'm so excited. He was actually someone that Raymond knew. And we have a couple artists doing prints for us. Raymond did a print that's kind of like it's a print that features all the characters in like little card formations. And it's sort of like a Loteria board. If you've ever heard of that before, it's like a Mexican card game.
Okay.
So it's kind of unusual, but he did that. And Steens, I don't know if you've heard of Steens before.
Maybe.
Steens Stewart, but she's a really super popular artist. Lives here in St. Louis.
Okay.
She did a book called Archival Quality.
Okay.
And she also does a daily strip now, but she was kind enough to do a really cool print for us of The Sovereign Witch. And there's a another artist from St. Louis named Christian Misi, who goes by the name of Misimo. And he did a really killer print for us as well. And, yeah, so it looks really – it's great-looking stuff.
Going to be a lot of stuff you have to offer for it.
Yeah. We have, like, the buttons, and we have, like, a tote bag now. And we've got the thing where we're offering, again, where me and a couple musician friends – can come to your house. This is like a St. Louis-based prize.
Yeah.
And we play some originals, some songs of your choice, talk about the Atonement Bell, you know, how we work with each other and stuff, and I read from my stupid haiku book.
Yeah. Which is awesome. That's great. So the Kickstarter goes up tomorrow as we record this. Yeah. And so what is the time frame, do you think? You have, 30 days for the Kickstarter.
Right.
What do you think the time frame to see the first issue would be? What's that going to be, you think?
Right now we're thinking about, and this all depends on Red 5 and their schedule, you know, but we're thinking right now January.
Oh, okay.
But...
It's a good start time. I mean, right at the beginning of the year, and
right,
yeah.
But we're not sure yet.
Yeah,
but we're thinking January. Obviously, people who back the campaign, they'll be getting everything first.
Yep.
That was a little difficult with Planet of the Dead just because of COVID, and everything being slower and deliveries and stuff. But with this one, backers will be able to get everything well before anybody else.
I gotta tell you, if I didn't get my stuff on Planet of the Dead before it was released, I had no clue. I was just excited to see it every day come in.
That's awesome. Yeah. And that's the great thing about Kickstarter too, is that like the people that back campaigns are very cool and understanding. They're in it with you. That's why they're, you know, on it. And yeah,
I may have an unhealthy addiction to Kickstarter too. My wife,
I tell you, I do.
Board games, because especially with board games, there's a big lag from the time it closes to get it. On average, probably about 12 to 14 months.
Yeah.
So I'll get, like, there'll be, like, a time where I don't get a Kickstarter thing in for 5 months, and then in 1 month, I'll get, like, 6 games. And my wife's like, how much did this cost? I go, I literally have no idea.
It's been so long.
Yeah. And between that and then, like, your books, and there's another, for those that don't do Kickstarter, you really should look at it. There's a good way of discovering new talent, new things, new products. I've bought clothes. I've Kickstarted clothes, which Jay and I have. There's a person that we've talked about that's been one of the inspirations for me in my show named Zane Lamprey. He's like kind of a drinking ambassador to the world and comedian. And he also designs like hiking clothes, and I've always Kickstarted his projects.
Interesting.
And then like... recently, it's been a long time, but The Dreams in Gary Gygax's Basement is the first Gary Gygax documentary that his family's on board with, and it's been delayed from COVID, but when it gets done, I'll get a credit in the film because of the level I backed, and I'll get the first copy of it, and then we're going to have a viewing party of it, and there's a professional DM named Sam the DM that we've had on the show. He's a really cool guy. He does sessions for Apotheosis Comics.
Oh, okay.
He does their Dungeons and Dragons sessions.
Nice.
And I said, we're going to do a recording and we'll watch the show and do that. And I can't wait for that. But I have a problem with Kickstarters, what I'm trying to tell you.
Well, it's great because you're getting something you cannot get anywhere else. Mm-hmm. And that's awesome.
Yeah. And crowdfunding is... crowdfunding to me is a lot like what we wanted out of the internet in general. Crowdfunding is still a pretty good way to connect to each other and sponsor the things you like without really having to deal with all of the criticisms and bullshit that comes with having echo chambers. Typically, when I create an echo chamber on Kickstarter, like for instance, there's this, I can't think of the name of it, but it's a Kung Fu book, and I just got my copy of it in, and I literally, from backing your guys' comic, you know, it'll tell you, if you like this, also look at these. Yeah. I ended up backing theirs and got...
Nice.
I mean, that's when the machine works in your favor.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Go down the rabbit hole.
Yeah. Well, certainly, Jay, if you've got anything else from the Atonement Bell before we move into the next phase of what we'll talk about, which is basically just wrapping up with a bunch of BS because we've been at this an hour. But if you've got any more questions, certainly still.
I mean, we'll probably go over this at the end, but like, where can people get your stuff?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
For the Atonement Bell, you mean, or just in general?
The Red 5 comics, I know for sure that you can go there to get the Butcher Queen stuff.
For that stuff, I usually just direct people to Red5comics.com store, and that's where you can get the individual issues of the first series and the second series, Planet of the Dead, but you can also get the collected trade volume of volume one of the first series, which with updated art, and it's really cool.
And if you ever get a chance, really friend Jim on Facebook and Ben too, because when Ben releases those, the page how he did it, and then the new panel side by side, you're like, whoa, it's unbelievable how much more you got out of the scene from doing that. It's unbelievable. Yeah. And then sometimes his colors, his lighting effects in it. Ben's a cool dude just in general. But it's awesome to see guys that, essentially I've now known for almost 2 years now and through the podcast and comedy. It's awesome to see the growth in your art, which is great. And writing. Both of it, yeah.
And he's great, I hope, like I said, I hope we can work on a third Butcher Queen again.
So is there going to be a collected edition of the second one?
There is. But probably not until next year.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's just because COVID still has this mess with everything.
And you can correct me if I'm wrong in this, but the first one, when it saw a collected edition, it sold out pretty quick before it came back up. Because I went to get it, and it was out. And then it came back up. So it did a good job. You guys did a great job. I know just based from talking to you guys, the Red 5 people certainly are cool. Like when you put me on a list with them, there's not like they do anything great, but they certainly, anytime that I have a post and I tag them, they always like it.
Yeah.
They've even, when the Butcher Queen stuff, they shared it. I'm like, that's really, somebody there is doing something that you wouldn't otherwise get.
That's what you want.
Yeah.
You want people to back you up and believe in your stuff like you do.
Which is awesome.
Yeah.
But Red 5 Comics is where I would direct you towards that. And also I wanted to say this weekend for Free Comic Book Day, I'm going to be at All American Collectibles.
Is that this weekend?
It is.
I had no clue.
I didn't either.
How did I not know that it was Free Comic Book Weekend? Let's talk about that for a minute. Where are you going to be?
I'm going to be at All American Collectibles or Comics and Collectibles.
Where is that?
That is in the...
I have to look it up.
Yeah, I don't know the address, but you can find them on Facebook. And I'm going to have copies of The Dead Palace there, Rough and Tumble, Ink and Drinks Free Comic Book Day issue that I'm in, and some rare Butcher Queen stuff with like variant covers and stuff. Mm-hmm. And talking up all that and the Atonement Bell Kickstarter.
That is 3268 Watson Road, St. Louis, Mo. So definitely check that out. Now, will Ben be there for any of it?
Ben's going to be at, he's going to be at Fantasy Shop Maplewood.
In front of, I don't know if it's still there. It used to be right in front of Schlafly right there.
Yeah, I don't know if it's
still there or not. But anyway, look it up.
But look at, I tweeted about it there on the Butcher Queen Twitter, so you'll be able to find it on there.
I've seen this logo before, but I've yet to stop into this shop, so maybe...
Man, this shop is so great.
I'll have to check it out.
You've got tons of old stuff, collectible stuff. Like, if you're an old school fan, you can get the new stuff there also. But if you're an old school fan, you will have your mind blown.
Awesome.
They've got some cool shit.
That's what I like to see. That's what I like to hear. Yeah. I'm always up for a new comic shop. In fact, Jay, we should probably organize a day where we just go and do a good comic or a good podcast trip and hit a bunch of these shops we've never been to.
I'm all for that.
I haven't done it. I probably haven't done that in 7 years. So, one of the reasons I'm looking forward to Planet Comic Con coming up, and we didn't get to do it last year, but it's also an excuse for my friends that live in Joplin and Springfield area, and my friends in Kansas City. We all get together, and he's certainly going to experience it for the first time. And we drink heavily, but we never don't go to the show. And we, now that it's where it's at, you can buy all day IPAs for like $5 for the tall can. And so I think me and Halpal drank like 9 of them one day.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had the best times at the comic book convention, just, you know, both by finding new stuff, like when I come across you guys, and and certainly, you know, feeding my unhealthy habit of drinking. Yeah. So, well, let me just remind people again, Kickstarter, The Atonement Bell, it goes live. As you heard this, it's been up for a full day. Check it out. I can't say enough about both Ben and Jim, but in particular, since Ben didn't come here and he's not drawing this one, primarily Jim.
Thanks,
but,
man.
But also, I'm very excited to just really, and I haven't done this yet, but I'm going to take a deep dive on Raymond Estrada because I love the little early peaks of the stuff you've done, and I love art. So
he's also in issue 3 of Razor Blades. If you've heard of that one, James Tynion's.
Oh yeah, I do know. I know what it is. But I'll check it out.
It's, yeah, it's killer, man. It's really fun.
I'll check it out. So I'm certainly excited for that. But if you'll stay for a little bit longer, I do have a couple of things. I'm going to lead into one thing that I saw today. This would be what we call the Throw It to Missy, which is the soon-to-be renamed, since Missy no longer wants to do the podcast. It's got nothing to do with any of the hosts on the podcast. She's just over being a nerd. I really, you know, the way I look at it, I got 2 good years out of the old girl. I did more than I was supposed to.
I come on and nerd it up too much.
Yeah, so. That's right. You really, if in the Venn diagram that is our lives.
From my perspective, I think this is a perfect level of geek.
Yeah,
I like
even
it.
If it were more geek, it's still the perfect level to me.
It is.
Yeah, I did see something today, and I want to get your input as a guy who's a creator and a writer. I saw today, and I've got very mixed views on this. I don't know if you saw this, Jay, but it was released today. What Marvel does for its creators that have influenced some of the MCU. Essentially, when a movie gets made in the MCU, the creator, whether it's the writer and or artist, gets a $5,000 bonus check and tickets to the premiere. And the internet is up in arms over this, that's all they get. I just kind of want to know what your thoughts on that were.
Well, it's difficult for me to even imagine.
Yeah, a $5,000 check, yeah.
Of like being part of the big two.
Yeah, right, right, right.
But, you know, I think the comics industry has had a history of not really being kind to the idea guys.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's, if you're Marvel, I don't know. I kind of fall on the side of I don't know if that's enough. I don't know if that's fair. But that's just me.
What do you think, Jay?
I just see the history of
be on my side.
Yeah, I've seen the history of what they've done, and the creators grow in knowing.
Yeah.
These are Marvel characters. They're not necessarily your stories. Even if you create a Winter Soldier from someone in the past, or create something like Runaways, they know ahead of time. But it's still kind of crappy of Marvel not to.
It is so. So to me, Runaways is even more unique an example of it.
Yeah.
That's Brian K. Vaughan.
Right.
And that is his creation. He created it certainly under the House of M, and he, you know, and it was with some kids of existing characters.
Yeah.
But it certainly was an original idea. And I am on your side. Where I would say that people sometimes get a little, it's a very passionate, certainly for people who've been in the comic book industry, are fans of comic books for a long time, even back when Wizard magazine was at its peak.
Yeah.
It certainly is a polarizing topic. What I will say is this: for as much as I want my friends that write comics, such as yourself, my buddy Aaron Conaway, Daniel Miller in Kansas City, well, I certainly would love to see that guys that have really poured their heart and soul in it always be rewarded. And I don't think that's just exclusive to you guys. It don't matter how famous they are, the Brian Michael Bendises of the world, the Robert Kirkmans, the Mark Millers, they put equal blood, sweat. What's that?
Scott Snyder.
Oh, I love Scott Snyder. Scott Snyder's one of my favorite. But all those guys have put equal blood, sweat, if not more. Those guys have been doing it a little longer, and they've paid their dues. So when I say this, I don't want anything people to think I'm disparaging them. But when you write a story, and let's take Civil War, for example. Mark Miller wrote Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
That certainly was a great story. It made for a very good movie.
Yeah.
But none of the characters in that were original, and he was playing in the sandbox that he was hired to play in.
Yeah,
so for that, I don't know what people are really looking. And I'm going to draw the dumbest of comparisons, but it is a comparison nonetheless. I used to work with a guy that was a retired mechanical engineer who's the guy that created the motor that allowed antennas on cars to go up and down. He created it. It was his idea.
Yeah.
No one at GM, when he created it, said, well, hey, we got a problem. We want you to solve it. One day, he just thought that he could increase the aesthetics and some of the wind flow of a car, the design of the car overall, by being able to pull that antenna down when it needed to come down. Mm-hmm. Now, kids these days would be like, what the fuck is an antenna on a car? But, and then some of them will be like, well, mine just screwed off. We used to beat our friends with it. But there were some that had. So when I talked to him, I said, well, how much did they pay? He goes, oh, that paid me nothing.
Yeah.
I was an employee of GM. It's GM's patent.
Sure.
And I know that's a weird analogy to make, but
it's very complicated, right? Because you look at the guy, there's two examples, the guy that created Ghost Rider.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was a, to me, that was a
Missouri
heartbreaking.
Native. Yeah.
That was a heartbreaking situation. You look at, like, Batman, you look at what eventually happened with Bob Kane, with Bill Finger. They've added that to the credits now, which I think is more than fair.
Yep.
But for Bill Finger, I mean, that happened after he died, right?
Yeah. Same with Schuster and Siegel.
It's very complicated.
And see, and that's what, so because of what you brought up, people get super passionate about it, and they should. There's a difference between what, and I'm going to go back to Civil War and Mark Miller. There's a difference between what those guys did and what Mark Miller did.
Right.
Those guys took something that did not prior exist.
Yeah.
Created it for a company, and then essentially got tossed aside by that company.
Yeah, and I think what you were talking about was when you go into work for a Marvel or DC, you know that you're going to work for this big corporation.
Yeah, you're. Yeah.
It's a brand.
It's one of those things. If you're in their building, so quote unquote, I use the term building, but if you work for a big company, and certainly whether you're in the field of science or engineering or product development, when you're in that building, whatever resources you use to make that product belong, that makes that product more belong to them. So when you are Mark Miller and you use Captain America and Iron Man, you are doing that for Marvel. He knew that. He was probably paid. I mean, Mark Miller, I've met the guy. I've had a arm wrestling match with the gentleman over beer. He's all of 4'11". He may be 5 foot tall in good shoes. He's a crazy drunken foreigner. He's great. He used to say that I always make sure they put my booth closest to the bathroom, depending on how close a bar is to my hotel, which is awesome. He's a great dude. He's one of my favorites during the heyday of Wizard World that I met. But you certainly, like you said, you know that you're getting in there, and although he certainly told a very good story, he told a very good story using parts of a greater recipe that were already there.
And that's what I mean. It's like all the examples that people are talking about, there's so many different levels of ownership and what you brought to it originally. You know what I mean? And so as someone who makes stuff, I would always like to see the artist, the creator, get paid more.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know,
that is absolute. There's no denying that. Yeah.
And particularly when you're talking about the big two, that's a lot of money, and they're owned by bigger corporations. You know, so
I can't remember who I was. I felt so bad about this. As I said, it was one of these times when I was at a show where I might have been too drunk. But I was at a comic book convention, and me and Dwayne, friend of the show, you've met Dwayne, or you didn't get to meet him.
I haven't yet.
You did not. You will meet him.
Yes.
In full, you'll get a giant dose of Dwayne. You'll get kissed on the cheek, and he will pick you up. He's my size, only a little heavier. I might be heavier. I don't know. I carry it better. We were at a, I can't even remember the creator, but it was a guy that I certainly liked, and he had, this was the Comic-Con or Wizard World, I can't remember, but he had this really cool black leather DC Comics bag with the DC Comic logo embedded, imprinted on it.
Nice.
And I go, oh, that's a cool bag. He goes, yeah, I got this for Christmas from DC. They just randomly sent it to me. And I go, well, that's awesome. He goes, yeah, every once in a while they do some cool stuff. I go, do you think they sent one of those to Mark Waid? He goes, I'm sure they sent it to everybody. I go, yeah, but it's Mark Waid. Like, you send Mark Waid a car.
Yeah.
He goes, no, I think everyone got it. They treat us the same. And I'm like, I didn't mean to insult him, but I mean, there's a difference between the guy that was writing Kingdom Come and really fueling the entire, at that point.
Yeah.
It's like, I was like, I didn't mean to be a jerk, but I was like, do you think Mark Wade gets the same toaster, you know, for opening up a checking account as you would? I felt really bad about that. But
So back when Falcon and Winter Soldier was on, Kevin Smith had Ed Brubaker on Fat Man.
Great writer.
Yes.
Great writer.
Yeah. And they asked him if he watched it, and he said no. He's like, I really don't have an appeal to, because they've taken my character and did what they wanted with him.
Yeah.
And he's like, I got a credit, but they didn't consult me for it. They didn't talk to me or anything.
Well,
so.
And certainly my point is they don't have to.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't have to. They should. They should give you – they should pay any amount of dues that they could to make it right. But I just want people to know legally they don't have to.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah. It's a very complicated
– It is. It's a complicated thing because going back to how I kicked this off, you put a lot of love into these things.
Mm-hmm.
And – you know, whether it's a relationship, your first relationship in junior high, or your the comic book that you created, you want to be not rewarded for your love, but you want to feel appreciated by the love you put into it. And
sure,
I don't think DC and Marvel have ever done a good job, and certainly that was the reasoning. You know, we've talked about this the year in comics. 92?
Yeah, I think so. 92, 93.
Which was the Image defection with the superstars. Oh, and that's kind of what they were founded on. So that was one thing. That story popped up today. So as a guy that writes, and certainly, like you said, not in the big two, but it was certainly the headline was to be clickbait about how mistreated artists and writers were.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. And that feels a good portion of the fan base, and I get it. But, you know, Twitter, by its very nature, and social media, it's so reactionary.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very easy to use.
And Twitter and all these people, just so you know, Twitter, I'm talking to you, Twitter, I'm talking to you, Facebook, you're very behind the curve on this argument. These guys, we've been living this since the 90s, and Wizard Magazine was our sole source of information for it. So you're late to the dance. I do want to go into the next thing. We teased it. We talked about it. You are a guy that has written and helped make, and certainly I've seen recently saw a picture of you hanging upside down for a film. But the Suicide Squad, and I put it in all caps, the Suicide Squad, which is a differentiator from the original Suicide Squad, which is a James Gunn written and directed film. Have you watched the film?
Yes.
All right, great, because this makes this conversation way easier.
Yeah.
Throw out a cautionary spoiler alert to those people that there may be some things we talk about that if you haven't watched the movie yet, certainly we're going to ruin certain parts, because there's two things I want to talk about that is not really ruining because it happened so early in the film, but it's worth talking about. For those that don't know, and I want to ask you, one, being a fan of scary movies, James Gunn created a movie that I consider perfect called Slither.
I saw that with him.
You saw it with him?
Yes, I did.
Really?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. He did a private screening at the Pear that people could, I guess, win tickets to. I don't even remember how I got tickets, but it was like an invite thing. And it was when he was still married to
Jenna Fisher.
Oh, yeah. Awesome.
And so he was there. He introduced the film, and there weren't a whole lot of people there. He talked about it a little bit, and Jenna Fisher was sitting right behind us, and we watched the movie. You're right. It's a great movie. It's super fun, and it really balances the scary stuff and the humor stuff really well.
Yeah, and also
and it's got Michael Rooker.
Yeah, it's got Michael Rooker, who's a mainstay in gun things, and it's got Nathan Fillion,
who's a mainstay too.
Yeah, and who's and Nathan Fillion is the sequel to Bruce Campbell in terms of genre. Actors. So let's start there. Let's start about Suicide Squad. I recently tweeted something, and I got a lot of good likes from people, not just friends and some strangers. I think this might be the most comic booky of all comic book movies I've seen.
Yeah,
yeah.
From the way it was written, and it certainly is written in like six issues, which is framed by the different titles that he gives, and I love how they do that. That's a splat. That's the opening page to each comic book that you're reading. Mm-hmm. I think that this is what we've been waiting for with James Gunn, is to have a giant budget and the mule blinders were taken off. Like, you know, you cut the brake line, you're just going full force into it.
Let him do whatever he wants
yeah.
to.
Yeah. And the final thing I will say about it before I let you guys talk, and I certainly will let you guys talk, it's Sylvester Stallone's best work.
Oh. He's so great as T-Shark. Yeah, he's fantastic. Yeah. So I love Stallone anyway, man.
I do too. Yeah. I'm a Stallone fan, but so I'm going to go to our guest. So what were your thoughts on Suicide Squad?
Well, if you're a fan of James Gunn, you know, like he did a, you know, Slither. And what was the film he did with Rainn Wilson?
Superhero.
And that,
looking back, yeah. by the way, the most awkward sex scene in the history of cinema.
Oh,
now
God.
That
Elliot Page
is now Elliot Page.
Yeah,
makes it even worse to watch.
Yeah,
it is unusual. Well, I think,
but a great movie.
It's a great movie.
I will say my first exposure to him was Movie 43.
Oh yeah,
because
yeah.
he did a little right. short. He did a short too, yeah. with yeah. the animated cat.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I love James Gunn.
Yeah.
And I think what the movie, I think the way you described it was perfect. Cut the brakes.
Yeah.
You know,
let him be the most gun forward, he's yeah. ever been.
And I think what was great, what I liked about it was the characters that he picked. He didn't pick super popular ones, you know.
And from all things I've read is he was allowed to pick whoever he wanted.
Yeah, and it was great. That's kind of a textbook example of in the superhero milieu, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you let a good writer and a good director do what they want, make the decisions, you'll get a really good time.
Absolutely.
Like he always does. I thought he managed violence and humor.
Which we talked about. We take that pin out.
Yeah.
He used
yeah.
levity to cut what otherwise would be a pretty gross film.
Right. Yeah. Oh yeah. And stakes and heart.
Yeah.
Heart being the really big one. And I think, honestly, I think heart is what he's so good at.
And there was an interesting article I read, too, about his original ending. And again, spoiler alerts, would be Ratcatcher 2 dying.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, I don't get it. He goes, they worked well with me. They told me I didn't have to use any characters from the first film. They told me they didn't even make me use Harley Quinn. And I want to put a pin in Harley Quinn, too, and finishing thoughts on it. But he said, they didn't give me a lot of direction. He goes, but the best direction they gave me was don't kill Ratcatcher 2, because from everything the dailies you wrote, she is the one heart of this film. Like
yes.
she even
She's
more
the heartbeat of the movie.
And Idris Elba did a good job. They did mm-hmm. a good job with him. They certainly redeemed what like Will Smith's character was supposed to be in the first one, Deadshot.
Yeah, and that was one of the things Aaron brought up when we watched it. She's like, he's Deadshot.
Yeah, he is, but they did him. He did a little better. Certainly, Will Smith didn't do
what was
it
the
wrong.
Is it Bloodsport?
Bloodsport, yeah. yeah. Okay. And people were up in arms, and we talked about it on the show too. Is that they were like, "Well, what a stupid origin! He shot Superman with a kryptonite bullet, really? No, that's his origin.
Yeah,
that's
his
where
origin.
He came from.
That is his origin."
Yep. Yeah. So Jay, what did you think? But Ratcatcher too. To my point, Ratcatcher had the heart, man. She was a great character.
It was yeah.
And
yeah.
that little hand waving rat was awesome.
Yes. I love the movie. I mean, my whole family watched it, and we all loved it.
And we'll put him on the spot with our Universal Untappd score yeah. of rating things here in a little bit.
Yeah.
So, but we'll get to that. But
what I liked about this one as opposed to the last one is with using all these unknown characters, you know they weren't going to make it through.
Yeah, absolutely.
And like, okay, we'll kill Slipknot to show how serious we are, and then almost everybody else makes it
yeah.
through the movie. But this one, it was like right
yeah.
off the bat. It was X-Force from Deadpool.
Yeah, absolutely.
yeah. Was, I've seen yeah. that comparison. I'm like, that is exactly how it was.
And so the first major spoiler, other than what I said about Ratcatcher, the first big one, so tune out, fast forward, whatever you got to do. The only decisions he made that upset me mm-hmm. is, one, I thought Flag was a great character that bridged both of them. I was sad to see that happen.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it added weight.
I think Will cried when that happened.
That was a tough one.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And then
my 10-year-old son.
Oh. And then two, I'm going to tell you that the best part of the first Suicide Squad, and certainly I was excited about him in this one, was Boomerang. And I was really upset to see Boomerang get offed so quick.
I think... Yeah. Jay Courtney is a horrible actor. So I wasn't
no,
I was surprised to see it happen.
His acting chops should just say I can play Boomerang
yeah.
really well. And everything else, not as much.
I was shocked, but I wasn't disappointed he went.
I loved Boomerang.
Yeah.
I loved him in the first movie yeah. and I loved him in this.
But once you had that first whole setup, you know, where there are a lot of casualties, the roles are off the table, and you don't know who's going to, and you're not disappointed. I mean, there's like things you don't expect. I didn't expect anyway. And I thought that was cool.
The flag one was well done.
It was.
At least he did a good job. And I want to tell you this. There's two things I want. First, I want to go out and buy all the McFarlane so I can build a figure King Shark. And second, I pretty much need a King Shark stuffed animal that says num num when squeezed. I think I need that in my life.
I know what I'm.
I love Godzilla, and there's plushie Godzillas around here. I've got main real Godzillas around here.
King Shark and Ratcatcher 2 are my favorite characters.
We will be buying all those characters for Christmas, most likely.
Do you? Would you eat a friend? .. No. never had a friend. Don't know. So Jay and Jim. The way we rate things, because we are a drinking podcast, even though you defile that rule every time you come, is that there's this app called Untappd. It's essentially Facebook for beer drinkers, and it's a way to keep track.
It's more Pokemon Go, I think.
It's more that's what it is. It's the Pokemon Go of beer drinkers. So you rate a beer that you've had, you keep track of it, you get badges for rewards for drinking heavily. But it's always a 5-point system, so we've adopted that. So for me, and I will start... to let you know, because it's no doubt that I'm when I love things, I love them wholeheartedly, and I love James Gunn. So this movie was a 5 out of 5 for me.
Yeah,
hard 5 out of 5
for
you.
Me?
Yeah.
If it's 5 out of 5, it's got to be stellar.
Okay. Yeah. No. That's okay.
I would give this a 4 out of 5.
That's a good rating, though. I'm going to tell you this. We've given a lot of things on this show 2.5s and 3s.
Yeah.
So 4 is... So to give you a comparison, let's say what would be a good 4 in the Marvel Universe? That's something we've gave a 4 to. I think I gave a 4 to Black Panther.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And I Black Panther's a great movie.
Yeah.
Oh, totally.
And I gave a 5 to Michael B. Jordan in the movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because I thought he chewed scenery up everything. So, Jay, what's your...
I was going about 4.5.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I just, this thing, the comedy, the gore, it certainly felt to me like a Peter Jackson early film, like Brain Dead or Bad Taste. It felt like a James Gunn Slither. It felt way closer to James Gunn's Slither than it did his Guardians of the Galaxy to me. And that's why I gave it a 5. And that's, I can't wait to see what happens. He's already been in talks of doing other DC properties. He, you know, certainly
he's doing a Peacemaker show.
Well, yeah. Spoiler warning: right. Peacemaker post-credit scene lives.
Yeah, because I'm like, oh, I guess it's a prequel show.
Yeah,
and
that's
then
what
they showed the post-credit.
Well, that's
scene.
What I told my wife
that's
going into. Told my wife and my daughters going into it, and I'll tell you a really scary story about my oldest daughter here in a second. But going into it. I told my wife, I was like, they're already doing a John Cena spinoff. She's like, well, he lives. I go, we don't know that. Could be a spoiler, or it could be a prequel. And then he quote-unquote died, and she's like, well, maybe it will be a prequel. And then she fell asleep because she was really exhausted over the weekend from mud volleyball and a bike ride I tried to murder her on. And I said, hey, by the way, John Cena lived. And... maybe my most... I enjoyed John Cena in the movie Cock Blockers.
Yeah.
But he was better in this.
Oh, yeah. He was great.
He was great.
I said he looked like the character from Cock Blockers when they went
in
costume.
It's because he gets that stupid hair.
Yeah.
He gets that stupid... And that's what I told her. I go, when they went to that bar, and I go, oh, he's just wearing the same clothes from the movie Cock Blockers.
Yeah.
The polo shirt and the cargo shorts.
He didn't have the Homer Simpson haircut.
Yeah.
I love it in all of his media appearances for the Suicide Squad. He's wearing his costume.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's great. I mean, you know what? In this movie, also, you know, certainly John Bender, one of our other two hosts.
Who I still have not met.
You haven't met him, and he's been my first co-host. You'll have.
And he probably didn't come because he didn't watch it, truthfully.
No, he did watch it,
did
I believe.
He?
Yeah,
he said he was going to, but I don't know.
Well, he responded. If you paid attention, he responded to my text and my tweets.
Yeah.
Like at 1 o'clock in the morning.
I didn't see the
tweet. So that means he probably did watch it, but his daughter got sick, so he couldn't make it here tonight. Okay. But he's often said, and I do this a lot, and I always make the joke, like, how great is that guy in the movie? Like, well, I'd make him breakfast. That's how great he is. Well, John says if he's not gay, but if he ever had to be, Idris Elba would be his man. and he just has a weird crush on Idris Elba. And Idris Elba was very great in this movie.
I think he's great in everything, man.
Yeah.
Also taller than John Cena.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got it all. I think he would make a good James Bond.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I would totally go see those movies.
Yeah, I would too. So, I've got one more thing, Jay, and I'm going to go ahead and get it out of the way before I let you get to yours, because we're not going to spend a lot of time on this, but we do talk about this every week. In fact, we talk about it so much we had to limit ourselves on how much we talked about it. But we're now at week 3 of Ted Lasso.
Led Tasso.
And I just have to tell people...
I've never seen it.
...that you'll be a better person for watching it.
That's what I hear.
It's the most positive person. In fact, we got to see the dark side of Ted Lasso, which is his alter ego, Led Tasso, this past week. Led Tasso's a dreamboat.
Yes.
This is one of those, and I texted Jay, this is one of those rare shows that the expectations are very high, and every goddamn week it exceeds our expectations.
I need to watch it.
It's maybe one of the best written sitcoms ever. And I know I get into hyperbole. I've said that already this episode, but it's so great.
Yeah, I heard nothing but good things.
And the jokes, like I made the joke on here, I told it, like when just the little jokes, and this is the one that sticks in my head because it's from this season, when they're trying to their main scorer's got the yips, so he's missing his PKs, and he goes out to hit a PK, and they're coming off a bunch of these ties, and the assistant. To the assistant coach, like the lowest coach on the total, he goes, "Should I pray?" And Ted Lasso goes, "Yeah, but to which God and what language?" You know, it's just small jokes like that. Maybe we just cross our fingers and hope for the best. You know, this you texted me. This last episode was fucking great.
It was incredible. It's much watch in my house. Like, unfortunately, I let my kids watch it now, and it is adult. Yeah. No nudity or anything, but the language is really up there.
Language is up there. There's some situations that were, you know, like, for instance, Roy Kent, who's awesome, he walks in on his girlfriend masturbating, and it doesn't. She's under the covers, but he sees what she's masturbating to, and he's like, "What is this? You know, is it some guy? Is it no? It's his retirement speech where he was crying because he never shows his emotion. So she's masturbating to the first time he's ever showed emotion in his life. So I mean,
so yeah, my 12, 11, and or 13, 12, and 10-year-old watch it with.
So
him,
that's so. What I brought. So if you get a chance, plus Apple Music, or I'm sorry, Apple Plus has a couple other good shows on it, certainly the Mark Ronson stuff, the DJ producer.
He's great. Yeah.
Dude, he's got a new music series on there.
Yeah.
I mean, he talks about the history of sampling, and he has Paul McCartney on there talking about how the Beatles sampled for Strawberry Fields and how they did it. It's and I'm my favorite band of all time is Beastie Boys, and he has them on there. Nice. But there's a lot of good things on Apple Plus to watch.
Mythic Quest
is about video games, and it's you know, Rob Macklin or whatever.
Yeah.
He, one of the Always Sunny in Philadelphia guys, and it's a beautiful show. It's great.
Yeah.
So, what do you got?
So, Reservation Dogs came out on FX today.
I haven't watched it yet.
Two episodes. They were both pretty good.
Reservation Dogs is a show about a bunch of kids living on an Indian reservation.
Yeah.
And the name is a play on Reservoir Dogs.
And there's even a scene where they're all walking in suits.
Yeah, and it's like they essentially it's what are they? How could you describe it? What it is?
It's you follow four kids that want to get off the reservation.
Okay.
And the first episode, another group comes in and kind of tries to push them off the turf.
In the most innocent way possible, it's gang warfare on an Indian reservation with kids.
Okay. There's a drive-by with paintball guns that was hilarious.
Yeah.
So
you've watched the two?
I watched the two.
It's Hulu, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll give it a chance.
And then it's weekly after this.
Yeah, I'll give it a chance. I think I shared it. Is that where you first saw it when I shared it? Or
no, I'd seen the trailer
But the trailer it had me hooked, man.
Nice. And then I watched Peyton Manning's Hall of Fame speech. It was incredible.
Oh, yeah. He had a great Hall of Fame speech. He talked
about the past and the future of football, and he took shots at Tom Brady.
He did take shots at Tom Brady, to which, when he mentioned his name, the crowd booed.
Yes.
Which lets you know how great Tom Brady is. I think my biggest takeaway from the NFL Hall of Fame induction is a player named Calvin Johnson, who has the greatest nickname in the history of football, which
Megatron.
Is Megatron.
That's great.
He came into the league in Tom Brady's second year. He played, he retired, and he was inducted into the Hall of Fame in between Tom Brady winning Super Bowls, which is insane long Tom Brady has played.
Wow. Manning said, when Tom Brady's up here in 2035.
Yeah, in 2035. He goes, we'll just, it'll be, you'll have to text your speech in or something like that. Yeah.
Because they keep cutting down how long the speech is. Yeah. But his speech was amazing because he touched on so much history of the NFL.
Yeah.
And then what he's doing to try to make it better for kids playing.
Well, football. My favorite memes that came out of it was I saw one that said Peyton Manning's in the Hall of Fame and Tom Brady isn't.
Yeah.
And also the other favorite meme I've seen with with Peyton Manning's induction is how big his bust's head is.
Yes.
The NFL did him dirty. He's got like a 5 head or even a 6 head.
Someone stretched the bust.
It was a good I'd forgotten that it was 2 days because they did the 2020 class and then they did the 2021 class. But it was pretty fun. I told Missy, so we went and saw Nimesh Patel Saturday, who's a stand-up comic.
Right.
Yeah, and got super famous for being – he's Indian. And I kind of blew Missy's mind with this. He was invited to an Asian – School of Asian Arts college – to do stand-up, and he was kicked off the stage for being racist. And I'll paraphrase his joke. It's a great joke. He said he used to go get coffee every morning where he ran into a guy in the neighborhood who quickly became his friend. It was a gay, flamboyant black man. And he went around, he goes, told a little story about the guy, and he goes, now, knowing this person is proof to me that being gay is not a choice, because who would be black and also choose to be gay? That's a great joke. That's a solid joke. And and it's not an insult. It's a good joke.
Yeah.
And they cut his mic. They came out and said, you're being insensitive. You're being racist. And so I told him, I said, it's weird that they would kick off the Indian guy because, you know, he's Asian also. And Missy goes, what? I go, yeah, Indians are Asian, you know, from the country are Asian. And she goes, so we had to go to Google, and I had to prove to her that they are, in fact, Asian. And she goes, well, I've just, my mind's blown in this night. But
Missy stereotypes there.
Yeah, so his stand-up was pretty unbelievable on Saturday night. I don't even remember where I was going with that story. So we were sitting there at the bar, and they were replaying the Hall of Fame. Edger and James, who got in, and he said, you know, my career started with gold teeth and ends in a gold jacket. But there was a super Sports Illustrated article about him years ago and how he talked about how hard it was for him growing up. And he didn't mean this to be a funny story, but certainly there's some comedic value to it, but it's also sad, is when he grew up, him and his friends used to get together and get bottles and materials to recycle and get enough money because we didn't have cable, none of us had TVs at work, we had sports, and we would go collect our money, we would take all that money and go buy a crack rock and then go give it to the homeless and let them smoke it and see how they acted. That was his entertainment.
Oh, my God.
And he goes, and that's where I came from, you know.
Wow.
And people always gave him crap about his gold teeth and stuff. He goes, you got to understand, I didn't know any different, you know. And he didn't get into that story, but he's told that before. I'm like, that guy came a long way to be a professional Hall of Famer, which is pretty good.
Kidding.
Wow. So, I asked my wife this. I'll pose this question to you two guys real quick. Hall of Fame is certainly an incredible honor, and that was this week. But we've also seen the Olympics this week. What do you think feels better? Does it feel better to be a Hall of Famer, or does it feel better to win a gold medal for your country? Both have to be an indescribable feeling.
I would almost have to say the gold medal, winning for your country, because it goes beyond being a sport.
Yeah.
It's on the world stage, and
it's every 4 years.
It's every 4 years.
And certainly there's something to be said about winning the gold medal in sports, that there isn't a professional league that you can make millions in. Like, you literally can't get higher.
But unfortunately, people don't view the Olympics like they used to.
They don't.
Because I've asked people, and like, well, I haven't watched any of it. I'm like,
You know,
that's all I'm watching.
So yeah. Me too. Me and my family. So me and my oldest daughter. And I was going to tell you guys a scary story about my daughter, and I'll do that right now. So my 16-year-old daughter is freshly 16, just got her license. She's driving. It's awesome. It's also scary. Mm-hmm. It certainly opens up a new world of possibilities for us, and that we don't have to take her to her dad's this weekend. She can take her sister to her practices. It's so awesome.
Unless it's softball practice, because then I'm coaching.
It almost makes me tear up thinking about how much she can do for us. But so I'm going to tell you the kind of guys my daughter's attracted to using the movie Suicide Squad. So she has a giant crush on Pete Davidson. So she came downstairs as the movie was on, and she goes, Pete Davidson. And she was down just long enough for Pete Davidson to get smoked. And she goes, well, I don't want to watch this damn movie. And she walked right back upstairs. So,
were you like, wait, Machine Gun Kelly's next?
Yeah. She's one of a kind. But so her and I, though, you know, who certainly, I used to tell people this all the time. When she was a kid, I met her when she was 2.5. Okay. I was there for her third birthday, so she's my daughter.
Sure.
I truly feel she's my daughter.
Yeah.
And her dad, not to say her dad's not her dad, because he does a good job with her too, but I've been around for a long time. There was a time in my life, and certainly this is where her dad wins because he doesn't have to deal with this shit. There was a time in my life where she was my Wally West to my Hal Jordan. She was my my best friend, my Barry Allen, She was my Barry Allen. Today, I would tell you this: through her 15s, she was my Joker to my Batman. Is what we did not go, but whatever has happened when she's turned 16, we've started getting along better again, and we really bonded over the Olympics. In fact, I would go so far as to say we should be doing the scoring for diving because we really became good at rating the diving through these Olympics. So when I hear people say, one hand that I've not, well, who's watching the Olympics? One, I'll get it. When it's in a country like Japan, mm-hmm. The reason people aren't, I really do believe that the reason people aren't watching it is because it's not on prime time here. It's the time difference. You get the results before you see it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if it was on here, people would be tuning in.
I'm sure that makes a difference.
Yeah. Certainly Simone Biles dropping out didn't help. The U.S. women's national team not getting gold didn't help. And the men's basketball team struggling early didn't help. But at the end of the day, and I'm not being I'm not Toby Keith and you giving you the big F you from the red, white, and blue, but at the end of the day, we won the medal count and we won the gold medal count. Yes. We still dominate in the Olympics. And I'll tell you this, go to NBC Olympics on Instagram and watch those women on the volleyball team win the gold medal in volleyball because they were certainly the third or fourth ranked team going into that.
Yeah.
And they had to beat the top two teams to win it. And they had to rally. And watch them fall, back to the original question I asked you two, watch them fall immediately after they score that point and start crying. It almost made me cry because I have two daughters that play sports. And certainly my youngest, who's a soccer player, and everybody who shits all over the U.S. women's national team that also voted for Trump, you know who I'm talking about.
Yep.
They certainly think that those women suck and they deserved everything they got. I'm going to tell you this. My daughter loves soccer, but she loves it that much more because I took her to see them play in St. Louis. Yeah. I got to show her on TV the most dominant soccer team ever assembled.
Yeah.
So I don't give a shit what people think about their stances. Those women did more for their sport than most any man has ever done for his. So
100%.
And so for that, when people tell me the Olympics are a little, oh, I don't watch them, that's because you're hating on them. You're a contrarian by nature.
Yeah.
You're the same person who doesn't get vaccinated because you don't know what's going on when that vaccine.
Oh my gosh, that's a whole different podcast.
Oh yeah, but anyway. So what? And I'm sorry I got off on that big tangent, but I've been stewing on this one for a while. What? Anything else you got?
Nope, that's it.
Well, I don't have anything else, Jay. If you don't have anything else, the one thing we can end it on saying is certainly go check out Radio Jim.
On Instagram. Radio Jimbo.
Radio Jimbo. You can find Butcher Queen. You can find The Atonement Bell Now on all social medias.
Yep.
And you can look them up by that. Butcher Queen Comics, I think, is what it is.
Butcher Q Comic.
Butcher Q, that's it, right? Yeah. You can go to Red 5 and see their previous works that they have. You can go to Amazon and look up things like Rough and Tumble. and he's not here, and he's not a part of the Atonement Bell, but certainly check out Ben Sawyer, Benjamin Sawyer. He's a great local artist, and he gets better every day, and he's got some cool stuff, especially if you like video games, some of his online art and stories that he does, like Master Blaster, that comic. It's really fun. And the Atonement Bell Kickstarter, go support it. Again, like I said, I get a kick out of being one of the early adopters of anything, but go see how much steam gets behind it and then feel good about you pledging for it. And Jim, like I said, you're certainly not limited to your three appearances. We won't even call you a co-host. But you can come on anytime you want. We appreciate it. And is there anything else you want to say before we wrap up?
No, man, just thanks for having me on. It's so hard to get the word out about projects, and you know, with you guys, it's you make it fun and
well,
easy.
Certainly the third time's a charm, because your average episode, like, we try to keep to the hour. This one's almost 2 hours, but that's because we did our tangents, and we appreciate it. There's no John, there's no Silver Badger. The only thing we have here to say goodbye is the most smooth voice you've ever heard.
Bye.
All right, we're done. We're going to play the music.